Show Flag Football is back at Canfield High School, the most family-friendly flag football league in the Tri-County area, with scheduled games September 11th through October 17th. Register now at neoflagfootball.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? Our top five Tuesday list today is going to be top five NCAA coaches with Youngstown ties. Now, Youngstown ties, how I'm defining that is going to be coaches that either coached at Youngstown State or are from Youngstown. Were born here, grew up here, and then moved on to be a head coach somewhere in Division I college football. So I'm going to start with my favorite on this list. I'm a Buckeye. I actually attended Ohio State University when Jim Tressel got the head coaching job. And in his second year, took Ohio State to the national championship game and won against arguably one of the greatest teams in college football history, the Miami Hurricanes. So Jim Tressel, for me, is my number one. Didn't grow up in Youngstown, grew up in Berea up the road, but obviously got his start as a head coach with the Penguins and then moved on with all his success from YSU down to Ohio State. Next, I'm going to go with Bob Stoops, one of, four Stoops brothers. Grew up, all went to Cardinal Mooney. Their dad was a legendary coach at Mooney. And all four of them went on to become head coaches. I'm going to talk more about the other brothers here in a minute. But Bob obviously had great success at Oklahoma, went on to win national titles and appear in so many bowl games and had so much success and turned it over to Lincoln Riley, who has had great success since he has left the program. Next up is Bob Davey. Bob Davey became a Notre Dame head coach, later went on to, was fired, but went on to New Mexico. But, just to be hired at a school like Oklahoma or Ohio State or Notre Dame, you will have to be, you have to have a great pedigree and you have to have put the work in. And Bob Davey had, didn't have great success at Notre Dame, but did have success. And to be at one of the top elite programs in the country is great. Next one, might not be able to see it. My bubble might be covering it up on screen a little bit, but Mark D'Antonio from Michigan State. Mark D'Antonio, I remember growing up him living, I believe he lived in Boardman, just down the road, from Tressel and I over in the, sort of like the Cornersburg, Boardman, Canfield area over there. But Mark D'Antonio went on to have a ton of success over at Michigan State with the Spartans. He was a defensive coordinator at Youngstown State, and he led Michigan State to a college football playoff berth. Plenty of success there at Michigan State. Now, they have struggled since he's left and in his kind of last years, but he had some great, great moments for the Spartans over there in East Lansing. Next one, I love this picture, but Bo Pelini, Nebraska, and obviously recently at Youngstown State, was also a defensive coordinator at LSU on some of their national championship teams. In 07, actually defeated Jim Tressel in Ohio State. Bo's had great success at Nebraska. I think they expected a little bit too much at Nebraska. He had great success. He was a 9 or 10 win team almost year in, year out. And since he's left, they've really struggled as a program to get to 7 or 8 wins even. So Bo Pelini makes our list here. Some honorable mentions. I think Mark Stoops at Kentucky could really excel and get in, crack this top five list here for sure. He's doing a lot of great things at Kentucky. And, in that Stoops family tree. His brother, Mike Stoops, formerly at Arizona as the head coach there, but previous to that was, all over. I believe he had some ties at Kansas State, obviously, with his brother Bob at Oklahoma as well. So, great defensive coordinator there. Pat Narduzzi. Having, you know, Pitt has kind of struggled over the years, but Pat Narduzzi has brought a real strong defensive ethic, defensive work ethic to that team. So they really are a gritty bunch. I believe Pat Narduzzi went to Ursuline High School. His father was a great coach, and he's doing great things over there at Pitt. So hopefully they can get, you know, some more wins under the belt and gain some more success going forward. A former Youngstown State head coach, John Haycock, who is now at, I believe he's at Iowa State, and he is really thought of highly as a defensive coordinator there, was with Tressel and the Buckeyes down there in Columbus as well. He's done a lot of great things in his career. Mark Mangino, Mark Mangino is actually from Newcastle, Pennsylvania, about, you know, 20 miles down the road from Youngstown, but was on Youngstown State staff in, I want to say it was 2013 or 2014, but Mark Mangino is about the only coach in recent history that's had any success at the University of Kansas. But he's done some, he did some really great things while he was there. He had a winning record. I believe he got them as high as number two in the ranking. When you look at Kansas football now and what it is, and to say they were number two in the ranking and won some, you know, bowl games, including some BCS bowls at the time, you know, that's a remarkable feat. So Mark Mangino, formerly of Kansas, later would come on and be an assistant for, I believe, a year at YSU. Mark Snyder also coached under Jim Tressel here at YSU, moved on to be a defensive coach at Ohio State, and then was hired at Marshall University. He didn't have a ton of success there, but was a really, really nice coach. A few others on this list, I added Carl Pelini, who is now the Mooney head coach, but he previously was a Florida Atlantic head coach and did some great things there. DJ Durkin at Maryland was a head coach, and now, you know, unfortunately his time there ended not so well, but you know, he is a really good coach, a Boardman grad. And, you know, now I think he's the defensive coordinator down at Ole Miss and doing some good things down there. So these are the ones I came up with on my list. Tell me what I missed. You know, again, my rules were they had to either A, be from Youngstown, or B, had to have been the head coach at Youngstown State. So you might say there's some other names that aren't on this list, but they had to meet those two criteria. So, you know, if I missed any, please drop them in the comments. Let me know. All right, we are live now, joined by the Pavlansky family. I'm going to just kind of go around the horn here and have them introduce themselves. So, Mike, we'll start with you.
Great, Mike, and right now enter my 20th season as a head football coach at Canfield. Previous stops being a mentor at Lisbon High School and the University of Kansas in 1985.
Awesome.
Tom, we'll go to you.
Yeah, in my first year at Poland as a head football coach. Previously spent the last 22 years as a head football coach at Lakeview. Past 29 years teaching at Lakeview as well. Before that, I was a graduate assistant at Colorado State for Coach Earl Bruce. And then before that, I was a student manager at Ohio State for 4 years.
Dave. I Dave Pavlansky, and I am entering my 32nd year of teaching English at Boardman High School. I started my career there as an assistant football coach under Bill Boren, who we're all rooting for to get to his 300th win or 400th, whatever it is. And I started there as an assistant football coach under Bill and as an assistant track coach, and ended my coaching career there in 2011. I was head track coach for a while, head cross country coach for a while. And now what I'm doing is I coordinate coaching education for USA Track and Field in the Midwest.
That's great. And with all due respect to all the other Pavlanskys, my favorite Pavlansky, Lauren. You're around
a little bit. Yes. So I'm Lauren. I just graduated from YSU, starting my first year of teaching at South Range High School. I'll teach math there. And I'll also be the JV girls basketball coach there as well. I coached 2 years at Canfield High School alongside my Uncle Pat and Coach Real, 2 years there with freshmen. And I coached 7th grade girls basketball at Struthers there before that as well.
Fair enough. And
and Pavlansky. I started teaching in 86, 87 at Youngstown Ursuline, and coached girls basketball, boys tennis there. Then went to Canfield, was the assistant for John Cullen for 5 years. Lakeview High School for 3 years as the head boys coach. Back to Canfield, girls basketball coach for 19 years. Girls tennis has been in the mix for about 18 years now, I think it is.
Okay.
And boys tennis for the last six, that's include COVID. But teach chemistry, still love doing that. Been teaching a long time, and she's just getting in the game. And I just realized we're going to coach against each other because I coached the girls junior varsity at Canfield for Matt Real, who took over for me in 2014-ish. Okay. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, yeah. It's always been fun. You know, I had the opportunity to coach Lauren. I actually played for Dayton a little bit. I've coached against you here and there, you know, not necessarily against each other. So it's been fun. And, you know, just meeting Tom today, but knowing Mike, you guys, we have a, you know, I say you guys are the royalty of high school football around here, at least in my opinion. So you guys are the Stoops family of college football. So, Pat, real quick, you were telling me a little story off air about you guys and the Stoops. Could you?
As a little kid growing up, I mean, my dad and Coach Stoops coached together at Mooney. And then my dad got the head coaching job at Poland. But I still remember on the weekends, we would occasionally have picnics on Detroit Avenue with the Stoops family or at Island Drive with the Pavlansky family. And in our backyard, we're pretty competitive in our backyard. Mm-hmm. But I never remember beating the Stoops family in backyard football. We did okay on the basketball court. Their driveway. I remember shooting underhand, doing okay in their driveway.
Okay.
But there's a long history of the Stoops and Pavlansky's together.
That's yeah, those are good memories. Our dads were good friends, and yeah, those are very good memories.
That's great. Well, you know, before we get all into this, coordinating all five of you guys to get down here, and I am going to try to get Annie down here on the show at some point, whether it's on a Zoom call or in studio. Tell us what she's doing now, Tom.
Yeah, Annie is entering her fourth year at Kent State. It's hard to describe. She graduated early in 3 years back in May with a degree in middle childhood education, but she still has another year of basketball left in her. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so she's entering her fourth year, her senior year of basketball at Kent. And, you know, and hopefully, you know, they can make a nice little run here.
That's fantastic.
But she's doing well.
Absolutely. Very good. Very good. So athletics all around the Pavlansky family. And again, appreciate all you guys coming in. So, you know, I'm going to get right to it. I'm not going to talk a whole lot of Canfield football, Poland football, because I know you guys, that's all you get drilled with all the time. So let me just ask, I believe is it the Thursday night or is it a Friday night game?
It's a Thursday night game, okay. August 19th.
Okay. So Thursday night, August 19th, 7 p.m., Poland Stadium, which is named after your father. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really cool. So I'm just going to say, what does that game mean to you? I'm not going to ask for predictions. I'm not going to ask any of that. But what does that game mean to you both?
Well, you know,
and you guys feel free to chime in too.
You know, from our perspective, and Tom and I have discussed this in the past, it's going to be different to coaching against a sibling. That has never been done in our careers. But as far as the game is concerned, I truly believe it's never about a name on the field. It's never about a coach. It's always about the players and the team and the community and the schools. And that's what it's going to be about on Thursday the 19th. It's certainly going to be special for us. It's going to be special for our family, our mom especially. But it's just nice to be playing Poland again in football.
Absolutely. Any other thoughts from you guys?
I shouldn't say I could care less about the game, but I look way more forward to, we have 26 relatives coming up from Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Coppolas were related to, and Struthers also. I mean, they're coming again. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a family reunion with a football game.
Yep.
So it's just going to be a fun weekend.
And talk about Tom going from one school for 22 years or 29 years, really. Down to Poland, and your first game is against your brother. So I don't know who made the schedule on that one, but, you know, what's your thoughts on the game?
Just like Mike and Pat said, you know, it's going to be a special night. But most of all, it's about the kids and about the Poland Canfield communities. And like Mike said, I know they're excited about playing Poland, and trust me, Poland kids are excited about playing Canfield again as well. And you know, just, and it's going to be a special night, and just trying to, hopefully make it through to August 20th.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good luck to you both. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, at the end of the day, you're brothers and, you know, you can hug it out on the 50-yard line right after the game. So, so good luck to you both. I know I'll be definitely watching that game. So I'm going to ask all of you guys this as a whole, and you can just chime in as you feel. So in any sport, you know, you guys are 2 days in, you know, Dave, you've coached track for many, many years. Lauren, you're kind of new to the game, but you have a message too. And Pat, you know, you've coached a ton too. What's your, no matter what sport or what it is, what's your overall message to a team before you get started in the season? Or, you know, I know it might change based on the group of players you have or the sport you're playing, but if you had to give like a general statement of what that main goal or main mission would be, what do you guys think on that?
Show up.
That's a good
stuff. No, that's it. You can't do anything without showing up. Show up, stay positive, get better every day. And our dad would say, enjoy each other's company every day. Enjoy each other's company. Work hard, help each other to get better.
Love it.
Yeah.
We were at tennis today, and we have – tennis is a little bit different animal. On that first day, you have challenge matches, mm-hmm. and they're important. It definitely affects what happens the rest of the season. We've had 2 days of challenges, and the one girl was struggling a little bit today, and it's her time off. Other people are playing, and I'm talking to her. She's a little bit down. I go, guys, look up. Look at this beautiful day. And I learned that from Larry Davis, who was the boys tennis mm-hmm. coach for 37 years at Canfield. And I think you have to be a person who, besides just doing all those things that Dave just talked about, you got to be being okay with making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Everything's not going to go perfect for
sure.
You have to learn how to come back from those mistakes and how to grind things out. And, you know, one of our recent graduates, Timmy Cianciola, that's the best thing he does. And he's at Denison now. That's just the player he is. No matter what happens, he just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. And I think we all love having athletes who can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to add to that, like, have fun and also making mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. So I always think that's important to let them know.
The one thing I can always say that I will just call you out right now that I always remember, and I knew right away you would be a coach, and you're going to be a head coach someday, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
But eye contact. And you, of any player I think I've ever coached, made the best eye contact. You always knew you were listening. You always knew you were focused. And I think that is one skill that you have taken with you, and I've seen you coach your players, and you do a fantastic job.
Thank you.
So let me ask this. Who out of the brothers was the best athlete in the family growing up? And I know you're different ages, different groups, but who would you guys guess?
What sport are you talking about?
Yeah.
Let's just say as a whole, like if you had to combine your –
I was the best defensive player.
Okay. All right. Let's say on the football field, who's the best athlete?
Mike was a quarterback.
He was a defensive guy.
Yeah. Okay.
Tom got into it too late.
Okay.
You know, he would have been pretty damn good if he had started mm-hmm. earlier.
Okay.
My favorite story with football was he kicked the football through the window. You guys let him play in the...
That was me with Grandpa.
Yeah. Tom wasn't around for that one.
Okay.
No.
Let me ask this, too. Since all you guys either coached or were a part of, you know, athletics at some point in an insane 2020, what was that like coaching last year with the mask and all the different protocols and things like that?
I think just difficult. You know, there's no doubt about that. It was difficult for the young people because of school, you know, couldn't do much in the community. The restrictions put on them.
Sure.
And so when you got there, it was almost a relief just to be on the field with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get your 2 hours there and then you're back to all the restrictions. So, you know, it was difficult. But I know our senior class last year did a tremendous job of channeling everybody in the same direction and everybody kept moving. And, you know, we were just appreciative of being on the field
sure.
and playing the 10 games we were fortunate to play.
I think the more than the else, it was rewarding because you had to make sacrifices to do things. And mm-hmm. I think the kids understood that. And I mean, they enjoyed the atmosphere. Mike was saying the 2 hours of normalcy out on the field,
sure.
you know, helped isolate some things, but you found out you know, about guys who are committed, guys who are willing to make sacrifices, guys who love the game. I know, again, at Lakeview, we didn't have the best record last year, but I can guarantee you, you came out and saw us practice, you couldn't tell whether the record was 7-0 or 0-7 or whatever it may have been. Those kids wanted to be there. They worked hard. They were coachable. And they just had fun with each other. They enjoyed each other. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed the day. And, you know, I find, you know, because last year, I had no doubt it was challenging, but it was also incredibly rewarding, too.
Absolutely. That's a great message. Love it. How about the Invitational last year?
Well, you know, two comments I want to make. I'll talk about the Invitational, but, you know, I haven't been on the field in a coaching situation for a little bit, but the teaching last year, really in a very positive way, reconnected me with how positive and resilient today's young people were. I mean, props to my freshman English classes, because they're the only people I was with every day, but they were absolutely outstanding. Helping out, understanding, still working hard, still learning, and keeping a positive attitude. And I think that sometimes folks who aren't involved with youth every day lose sight of that.
Sure.
They were outstanding and resilient and very pleasant to be around. I was gifted to be with them last year. The Invitational, I mean, a normal Invitational runs 16 races on the half hour, anywhere from 300 to 700 per race, with about 20, 25,000 people rolling through just watching during the course of a day. And we were allowed to put 150 on the line. They had to be 10 feet apart or 6 feet apart. It was a tad bit of a logistical nightmare. Felt like I was Eisenhower doing the D-Day invasion, but it worked out. And we had a lot of positive support from the cross-country community, particularly Ted Roop. And we figured out, you know, and Jim Fox, and we figured out how to get it done. And so, you know, that's not unlike everybody else who was coaching anything last year.
Sure.
Everybody just figured out a way to get it done and have something there for the athletes.
Yeah. And hats off to all of you guys, because, I mean, you know, I think kids need that normalcy. They need it, whether they're, you know, middle school or whether they're seniors in high school. They need that normalcy. And you can see it just, like, makes such a difference to get on the field or court or track or whatever it is. How about you guys?
I think our students and student athletes both, you say to them, say, listen, we're not guaranteed this game tomorrow. We're not guaranteed school tomorrow. You know, I think they cherished the opportunity, believe it or not, to be in the chemistry classroom a little bit more than mm-hmm. normal, if they do cherish it at all. but I know our kids on the court, whether it's tennis court or basketball court, it was a newfound focus more than anything else. Because they know, you know, and last year we lost about 20 some days of practice time because we were out with COVID as a team.
Sure.
And it happened over Christmas break. So, like, and we missed a bunch of games,
mm-hmm.
But still had a rewarding season. And, you know, the parents, the kids, a lot of Zoom calls. It worked out. Everybody pulled together and it worked out for us.
Yeah. Had you guys ever used Zoom before in a practice setting or anything?
No, when we are our classrooms for USA Track and Field were in general, I mean, they always were. We were traveling, and right before we shut things down for the 3 months previous to that, it was like they took a crystal ball and said, let's put Dave Pavlansky everywhere there's going to be a COVID hotspot. So, you know, so I started out in Seattle. Then I went to Chicago. I was in D.C. a couple of days before it shut down. And they decided, the national office in Indianapolis decided to make it, you know, we're going to go online and we got to figure it out. And Dave, you're in charge. And so, yeah, and I had never been on Zoom, but we rolled it out and we did okay.
Very nice. So someone in Lauren's position or someone younger that maybe even someone like Annie who might, you know, is playing basketball right now, but might go into coaching one day. based on her, you know, genes and heritage. I'm guessing that that's probably a path for her. What advice would you give to someone that's a young coach or wants to get in, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whether it's tennis or any other sport? What advice would you guys give?
Be yourself. Yeah. Be yourself, you know, be yourself. And from there, you know, you'll, the knowledge of the game, everything else, it will be taken care of. But most of all, you got to be yourself. You can't be a phony. You can't be somebody you're not, you know, and most of it's be yourself.
The cool thing is Lauren's been part of the girls basketball staff at Canfield. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'll see her grow.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I still remember at first saying, hey, listen, I'll help you with some subs today. You know, the first game and be there on the end of the bench and help with some subs and maybe whisper to her, hey, might be a good time to call a timeout, you know, might be a good time. And you just learn those things as a coach because you're wrapped up in every other thing. You forget right. about other stuff. And I think freshman basketball or freshman anything is a great opportunity to see if you really want to be a head coach. Because you are the head coach of the sure. freshman team.
Right.
And it's a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, she's going to do great at South Range. And mm-hmm. you're dead on, Justin, what I've been thinking. I've already told her this. I said, you're going to be a head coach someday.
Yeah.
Before you even think you're going to be a head coach. You're going to be. And you're going to be a good head coach. And I think, you know, the best advice I can give her, besides what Tommy said, absolutely be yourself. But just, you can't be afraid to make mistakes because we're going to make mistakes, mm-hmm. you know, as a coach. And you just got to learn from them and move on, just like the kids have to. So,
I think great advice there. And the thing I throw on top of that is be organized. Okay. Have a plan for every day and, you know what ball game one looks like. What's the date and what's ball game one look like? And then backtrack from there what you need your team to be have in at that point in time for ball game one, not for ball game 10 or 20 or whatever, maybe 22, but be organized. And if you're organized, things just go a little bit smoother than wasting time and staying around and out. 2-hour practice turns into a 3-hour practice. And, you know, just you got to be yourself. Everything you're talking about, I think, is tremendous. Throwing on top of that, just be an organized coach. Whether it be a position coach, assistant coach, what's my responsibilities today? Be organized. And then get the most out of your kids you can.
Love it.
I'd say keep growing as a coach. Be a student of the game. All the time. If you're going to have a 30-year career, each year should be different and better. It shouldn't be the first year over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Learn from as many other coaches as you can, and just always be a student of the game and everything that everybody else has said. You know, I mean, there isn't just one thing that's the best piece of advice.
I talked to a local coach. I don't want to say his name, but he's been in it for about 25 years. And he said, I haven't coached 25 years. I've coached 1 year, 25 different times, because mm-hmm. he said it's a different group of kids. It's a different group mm-hmm. of athletes, parents, whatever it might be. And I think everything you guys are saying is spot on. Any sport, what has changed the most? I'll tell you what, we'll start with football. So from when you guys broke into coaching, what has changed the most from then until now?
Certainly the technology.
Okay.
The unbelievable technology we have. You know, back when I broke into coaching, if you want, like Dave says, learn, you've got to learn. How do you learn? You go listen to people speak. You read books. Okay. That's the way it was back in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Now, I can get home from this interview and sit down and pull up a clinic that happened out in California a week ago. Or if there's a clinic tonight, I could watch it live if I needed to. The technology has just exploded and made coaching, the availability of information to you, just, you know, right at your hands. And if you're not listening to people talk and give clinics and, you know, trying to learn that way, you're just not trying hard enough because it's right there at your disposal.
Tom?
You know, Mike said, obviously, technology is a significant part of the transition of the game, but also, you know, the game's never been safer. I mean, the game has not ever been safer, equipment wise, coaching wise, you know, skill development wise, blocking and tackling wise. USA Football has done a great job, you know, teaching, you know, I mean, keeping your head out of tackling. And but again, the thing is, I mean, the game's never been safer, and I don't think it's never been better.
That's a great point when I thought about that.
You know, let me jump on top of Michael's technology. Something happened today at tennis. Mm-hmm. I've got a young freshman player. She's a lefty. Her footwork when she serves is exactly like John McEnroe. She doesn't know who John McEnroe is. I pulled him up online while we're standing there talking about her serve, showed her McEnroe's serves. See how he puts that ball into the court a little bit? And he comes, and she was tossing behind herself. She goes, wow, okay. Instantly better. Like, instantly. And I remember when I coached track for the first time with Mary Dimitrovich at Canfield. I went to Dave, said, Dave, it was a Saturday. I said, I got to coach hurdles on Monday. He goes, all right, here we go. Here's eight tapes, and here's this, and here's that. I'm like, son of a gun. So what did I go to? I went to this last guy's name, Moses. The great hurdler,
mm-hmm.
Edwin Moses.
Yeah.
I showed the kid, I said, see this form? This is what you got to look like going over hurdle. This is what we have to look like. See how that trail legs like this? See how the leg legs like this? Now, you know, and we talked about things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the technology has been a huge help, a huge help.
Okay. I think today, more than any other time, certainly much more than when we were growing up and we were involved, I think young people have a wide variety of choices where to spend their time, a much wider variety of choices. And so as coaches, I think we continue to have to be salespeople so that athletes and parents are aware of the tremendous benefits of not only physical activity, but being involved and being committed in a sport, being a part of a team and working together. There are so many positives there that it's just a whole heck of a lot better than sitting in your basement playing video games.
Sure.
You know, and but I think we need to sell that more than we used to. Used to be, I mean, we were growing up, you played whatever sport there was.
Sure, yeah.
And that's what you did.
Mm-hmm. And you just, like you said, you played with the Stoops kids growing up, and that led to your high school team, which right. led to, mm-hmm. you know, end up being playing and coaching. So I'm gonna go back to you two now for a second, since you guys have the probably the, you know, the most routine type thing coming up with the game coming up in a few weeks here. So could you take us through, I want to say a typical Friday night, but I guess it's going to be a Thursday night. Could you take us through a typical Friday night or game night and what that looks like for you guys? You don't have to give any of your secrets away or anything, but, you know.
You go first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're younger.
I think everybody's creatures of habits, you know, and it certainly isn't probably not the best way to go about things or – I have no proof. I mean, it's you do what feels right.
Mm-hmm.
But we do. We have a routine where, you know, locker room will open up probably like around, if we have a 7 o'clock kickoff, we'll open the locker room for a home game around 4:30, 4:15 maybe. I mean, I know a lot of the coaches probably would be there around 3, you know, if not earlier. And then kids, I mean, we're not going to, if kids want to come, we're not going to kick them out. You know, but we'll start to get going around 4:30 with, I mean, sophomores will have some duties in terms of getting the field ready to go and that. And then 5 o'clock, we'll start our routine where we always would have a speaker come in and talk to the kids, whether it be tied to the program, an alumni, an administrator, or a coach or someone, you know, just to give them a message about, you know, something that they need to hear. Not necessarily it's not a rah-rah speech or anything like that, but just some type of positive message. And then, you know, we'll get into probably 30 minutes of just final meetings, you know, position-wise, breaking things down. And then we'll have a team walkthrough, you know, make sure we know what our substitutions are and so forth and so on in terms of the situations of the game. And then, you know, by that time, you get around 5:50, 5:55, and we'll send the kickers out, specialists out. And then, you know, we got a routine set where, you know, probably around 6:15, your entire team will go out there and get warmed up, warm up in for about 20 minutes and then get out. Because I mean, I don't personally, I don't like pregame whatsoever. I want to be, let's just go play, you know, let's just go play, you know, but, so we won't be on the field too long. All right. And it just depends on when the coin toss is and everything else. And, you know, but that's pretty much what we would do.
So in all of that, when are you going to paint Michael's locker room pink?
Yeah. That's
what it is. I think Tom said, we're just all creatures of habit. And, you know, that's the one thing we want our kids to feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. If it's a home game for us, okay, we're going to have our team meeting probably about 4:45 or so, and then allow them to get dressed in what we call their shells. And at 5:25, we're going to start our position meetings. So if it's an away game, okay, we're going to get there 15, 20 minutes before we start position meetings. So we'll arrive somewhere at 5:10 or 5:05. So our guys know at 5:25, position meetings have started, and mentally they know in an hour and 35 minutes, it's kickoff time. You know, and you go through your position meetings, and then they get 10 minutes to fully dress if they're going to be on the field for special teams. And then everybody else will have 20 minutes before they have to be on the field. And like Tom says, it just, you know, we're not out there too long, just enough to break a sweat and,
yeah,
you know, run around a little bit and back in right around 6:40. And you want to talk about the slowest 20 minutes of any Friday night?
I'm sure.
It's 6:40 to 7 o'clock.
You guys and, still get butterflies?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, we'll just have, you know, last minute team meeting right around 6:55 and head on out to the field and see what happens at 7.
I know there's some local coaches that watch the show and might be at home taking some notes right now. So that's good stuff, though. That's good, especially, you know, I only played 1 year of football, and, you know, I know some
Did I drive you out of it?
No, I was more of a baseball fan. No, I had fun the year I played. But it's cool to hear some of the, you know, because football is probably my favorite sport to watch, not necessarily maybe play, but, you know, it's really cool to hear that routine, because I would think as a player, I would be so amped before a game that I would just be going so stir crazy. So it's cool to hear that routine, and that probably gives them a little bit of, you know, like calm their nerves beforehand.
It's just like a routinized warm up in track and field. I think that what pregame routines do is they can serve as kind of a Linus Peanuts security blanket, so that you can take that routine and play at Poland High School, or you could take that routine and play in the Horseshoe for a state championship. And the routine is the routine is the routine. And it's something that they can grab onto.
That's great. Let me ask just one more question about like the game atmosphere compared to last year to what you've experienced in the previous. You know, did you feel like you needed to motivate your players more because there was no fans besides maybe a couple parents in the stands, or did that change any, you know, whether it's, you know, I know there's probably not a ton of people at a tennis match, but girls basketball, there you get a decent crowd at Camp Field, and, you know, in the stands for football, there's thousands of people out there. So what was that like last year compared to, you know, did you do anything different or?
We didn't. Obviously, there's family in the stands, but ultimately, like we tell our kids and try and preach to them, if you really sincerely love the sport, mm-hmm, you play with nobody in the stands.
Yep.
You just want to compete.
Yep.
You know, if you're a competitor, you just want to go compete against another team to see how good you are. And that doesn't mean you're winning every game. Mm-hmm. You know, winning every game doesn't define a successful season.
Exactly.
Okay. How much better did you get from beginning to end? And last year, you know, there is no doubt with a limited number of fans, your buddies aren't there. Okay. The bands aren't there from when you're on an away game, things such as that. You know, do you just like to compete? And we found out last year, our guys, that crew we had last year, liked to compete.
Okay. Very good. Anybody else on that one?
Okay. I think Xander Schauffele, who just won the gold medal, mm-hmm, for the U.S.,
yeah,
he said the same thing. He goes, I don't play to get medals or trophies or money. He goes, don't get me wrong, those things are great.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, but I play because I love to compete and see how good I can be against the best.
Absolutely.
And I think kids at every level they're at, if you're going to have a successful team, they're going to love to compete.
Love it. let me ask this. I don't ever like to ask this of a coach of players you have coached personally, but who is the best player or athlete you've ever played or coached against?
I'm not afraid to say who I coached. In fact, I talked about her today. I'm coaching the girls' tennis, and Will Klusnik pulls by with his son. You may not know the name Will Klusnik. He's new head coach at South Range, I think, the boys' coach. His twin sister, Emily, the best athlete I've ever coached. Quick story about Emily. She was on both teams in the state basketball tournament, Final Two and Final Four for Bill Wolf back in 90, 91. They went back-to-back years. Then she played tennis for me as a sophomore, losing the state finals doubles with her partner, Jenny Bender. Obviously a really good player. She was a national caliber swimmer. So if you're talking athlete, that's doing it in all different kinds of sports. But let's take it one step further. Her junior year, they come back, and they're one of the favorites to win the state tournament. She blows her rotator cuff in her right shoulder. Can't serve overhand. Serves underhand every match. We make it to the state final 16. Her serving underhand. And when she got to the net head and overhead, she did it left-handed, not right-handed. So, and we lose in the first round in three sets to the team that finished third in the state. To me, that's an athlete.
Yeah.
And still the best athlete I've ever coached.
Lauren, you want to take this one?
I don't know. I mean, played against a lot of good people, coached a lot of good athletes too. Not one really comes to mind.
The girl that comes to mind, at least I think when you were on the roster, she played at Gilmore Academy. She's now at University of Michigan, mm-hmm. and she, I think her name was Nas Bohannon or something, but Hillman. I think she put up 50 last year.
Nas Hillman.
Yeah, really.
Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So I just specifically... She beat us up pretty good.
Yes.
I remember that one.
You know what? It is unfair to ask about the athletes you've coached mm-hmm. because in track or football, I've been around some tremendous athletes. I was a 23-year-old second-year coach, first-year defensive coordinator in Florida, and we won our very – it was the first game a high school had ever won. And so we were feeling pretty good about ourselves. And the next game, we played North Fort Myers High School, and a young man named Deion Sanders was their quarterback. And so that didn't go real well for a defensive coordinator. But, yeah, Deion Sanders, and you're making me think now, coached 2 years in a row against Thurman Thomas.
Wow.
While coaching at Boardman, I mean, we played against some tremendous folks. Andy Katzenmoyer comes to mind.
Tom, how about you?
Boy, that's a tough one. And, you know, most
beat Deion Sanders.
When we competed against Lynn Bowden in 13 and 14, mm-hmm. When he was at Liberty, okay. But even before that, L.J. Scott from Hubbard, who went on to play Michigan State, was a tailback. Those two guys were. Or something else, but the best athlete overall might be Bradley Fletcher, who played at Liberty. He was a football basketball guy. He played like 8 years in the NFL as a corner, just pure athleticism. I know he also ran track, was a state track athlete.
Okay.
He might have been the best one that we've ever competed against.
Okay.
Tough. You're in the game for 35 plus years, whatever it's been, and
right.
There's just so many great athletes you play against. When you asked the question, immediately my mind went back to when I was at Menor High School and we were playing against Camp McKinley. And, on the other side of the ball there for a couple of years was a Mike Doss, Kenny Peterson,
mm-hmm.
The fullback that was tremendous. Jamar Martin. Yep,
yeah.
Tremendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that was all one team.
Yeah.
And, those guys, obviously went on and had great collegiate professional careers. And, but that's certainly not to slight anybody else because we played right. against the Ignatiuses and, you're down here and we competed against the Hubbard teams and when we were in the league and things like that. So there's just so many.
Last year in the playoffs, you guys.
Michael Hall.
Yeah.
Michael Hall was another one. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And defensive lineman who's going to go to Ohio State.
This year for Ohio
right.
State.
So it's just so many different guys. To single out one's difficult.
Exactly.
We can make a Hall of Fame team of guys we've yeah. competed
against. What about the Brookfield team?
The 78 that we played against.
Marcus Merrick?
Marcus Merrick, Darwin Almer, Johnny Lott. Is it Johnny Lott?
Yeah, because Merrick ended up being the captain of Ohio State. And Lott was the captain of Michigan team. And Ulmer was the starter of Arizona State. Arizona.
One of the two. State, right? Yeah. They had a tight end that went to West Virginia. That was all one team.
And the year before, it was Pritz. Went to Penn State.
Penn State, the linebacker. So, okay. Some great guys.
All right. Well, I'm going to vote Deion Sanders. So winner. But those are still some amazing
guys. You're going to select the girls again. I know.
those are some amazing names, though. Let me ask this of all of you. This might make you think more than that last question. And if you weren't a coach / teacher, you would be blank.
In trouble.
That's a great answer.
Probably true.
Yeah.
I like
that
one. I probably wouldn't be anywhere. Yeah.
Okay. Any other professions?
Coach Simington always said I'd be a good lawyer because I had the gift of gab. And I'm trying to keep it under control today, but it's not. It's never under control. Maybe a lawyer.
Okay.
I was in school for accounting for a year, so probably accounting. Okay. Accountant.
I have been teaching and coaching so long,
I can't
fathom anything else.
Okay. How about you, Tom?
No, I'm with my older brother there. Yeah, I don't know.
You know what? You guys are so patient, and you're so, you're just such so eloquent speaking, and you kind of looked at me funny on that one, but I think so. You guys just portray such a positivity that all of our athletes need today, whether it's girls, boys, young, old, whatever it is. I think that's phenomenal. And I think everything you guys are doing is just so, so great.
Thank you.
Let me ask you just a few more questions. We're going to wrap up here in about 5 minutes, but Tom, especially for you, cause you were you the high school, president of an organization last year?
I was the president of the Ohio High School Football Coach Association.
So let me ask you guys, you and your brother on this one, I believe the high school playoffs are expanding this year. And I know that's been an issue of contention with a lot of coaches. Just, I guess, real quick thoughts on that.
That's a loaded question. Back in January of 2020, before the pandemic hit, we made a proposal to the OHSAA to expand the playoffs to 12 teams. This was done after probably like a 2-year study by our members, by our association directors and that. And they put together a plan that the association felt was worthwhile to go forward with and propose it to the OHSAA, who are decision makers. And we proposed it, they accepted it. And, and then the pandemic hit obviously last year we were just trying to play the game of football. And, I don't think anybody, can find anything wrong with what the OHSA did last year for the most part, in terms of just trying to get the game played and getting kids involved and giving everybody an opportunity to go play the game, play as long as they can, the playoff format, let everybody in, past spring, obviously they unilaterally made a decision to go to 16 teams without consulting anyone, and that was disappointing. Mm-hmm. I just can't stress that enough. But it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Just like anybody else, we're gonna try to make the best out of it, and hopefully the OHSA knows a little more than what the Coaches Association does, because we're here to serve the kids, and we want to serve the kids the best we can. And so, we'll try to make the best out of it.
Okay. Any other?
Decisions have been made. Mm-hmm. My opinion, how I feel, I don't think matters anymore. Like Tom's mentioned, we're going to make the best decisions that we can and see where we're at week 10 and where we're slotted and if it's worthwhile to go on or not. And, I would hope that at the end of the year of doing this, that the association will sit down and sincerely study the 16-team expansion. And if it's worthwhile and the coach association is wrong, then we continue it. If it's not worthwhile and we were correct in our studies and our findings of having a 12-team, that they would reverse course.
Okay. All right. Let me ask all of you guys this. This potentially could benefit your daughter, Annie, who's in college right now. We were talking before we came on about Quinn Ewers, who's now at Ohio State, was supposed to be going into his high school senior season, but can benefit off the name, image, likeness. So I guess as a whole, just jump in as you feel. What's your overall thoughts on, do you agree with it? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? You know, just your overall thoughts. Whoever wants to take it.
I how do you say no to a young man that has the ability to make $500,000, has done everything academically in the state of Texas he's supposed to do, is a quality athlete, and Ohio State's offering him a scholarship, and Ohio State says, we'll take it right now. Mm-hmm. How do you deny that to them? It's certainly not what history is. It's certainly not what tradition has been. But, you know, somebody had said this one time in the clinic I was at, hey, the only constant change we ever have is change. It's not always going to be. Dave and I were talking about how doubles used to look like back in the 80s and 90s, and totally different today. So, hey, if this is what it's going to be, you know, then seniors in high school know, hey, if I'm of that ability, I've got to graduate, and I got the ability to go make a lot more money than I would if I'd stayed as a senior in high school, you know, and go compete. I don't know if you can, you know, take that away from them.
Dave, I saw you shaking your head a little bit.
Well, you know, I think that. And I agree with everything that Mike said. I think there have to be allowances made for collegiate athletes to make some money. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think that puts people in the seats and that puts people in the stands is the idea that, you know what, there is some general parity. You know, every now and then a MAC school is going to beat a Big Ten school. Every now and then, Appalachian State's going to go to Michigan and beat them. I think that this new realm that we're entering is going to make that a lot less likely, you know, that and that the folks with a whole lot of money and big branding are going to get, they're the ones that are going to, they're, those programs are going to be the ones that are going to benefit, I think, possibly to the detriment of the others. And I don't like to see that happen. I don't know that I have an answer for it, but that's my take.
No, that's a great point.
I don't know the answer either, but I mean, I was blessed to go to Notre Dame back in the early 80s. Ray Carter was from Youngstown Ursula, and he played football. He got hurt quite a few different times, but he went through everything. And all the guys who were in the dorm with me, Pat Ballage and Tim Brown and those guys, I was like, you guys need to be paid. I mean, it'd be a Saturday night or a Wednesday night, whatever it was. We'd have the pizza oven in the basement. They'd be making pizzas, you know, $5 for a pizza. You go downstairs, get a pizza. Those guys didn't have money. Back then, there weren't, like, stipends for them. If there were, they were using it on that. They didn't have money for pizza. They couldn't get a job. I think it's just fine, this NIL. And I think it's like everything else. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm not in agreement with the 16 teams either, but we're going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't want to wear a mask on the plane the other day when I was in San Antonio, but, you know, I'm vaccinated. I'm like, come on, you know, but we figure it out and we do what we have to do. But I think it's far past time that those people get compensated. I just really do. I think there's enough small towns with schools, and that's the only thing that's there, that it won't just be the Ohio States and the Alabamas. They're going to get their players anyway. And they're still only allowed 85 or whatever. But I think some of the other schools are going to really get more kids because, oh, wait a minute, that guy's going to Ohio State already. He's going to get all the money. If I go to Nebraska, I'm going to get that money. I think there's a good chance of that happening too. How it's going to play out, I'm not sure, but I think that's a possibility.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Dave, one thing I wanted to ask you before we leave here too. Obviously Olympics going on right now, track and field, it's just kind of hitting stride right now. Do you watch that more intently have you worked with any of those athletes before?
No, I haven't worked with any of those athletes. I've worked with, folks who have coached those athletes.
Sure.
Back in 2012, I was able to spend a week at the Olympic Training Center, which is a tremendously humbling experience. But yeah, I I get on my USA Track and Field app every morning and I check results. You know, it seems like among all sports, not just track and field, athletes are competing hard, having a good time. Seems to be a really good Olympics. And so that's that. Yeah.
No, that's great. That's great. Well, I can't thank all you guys enough for coming down. So let's remind people real quick, August 19th, 7 p.m., Dave Pavlansky Field. That's going to be an exciting game. Best of luck to both of you on your seasons. Good luck with the Invitational. Good luck with South Range Lady Hoops. Good luck with Canfield Tennis and Hoops coming up. And wish you guys all the best. And thanks to the Pavlansky family for joining us.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.